Hello, I am Emma, the 11th Duchess of Rutland, and this is Duchess, a podcast in which I explore the most historic homes of the UK and meet the inspiring women who lead them. As a daughter of a Welsh farmer, I grew up far away from the glamour and wealth of aristocracy, but my life changed forever when I fell in love and married my husband, the 11th Duke of Rutland. Suddenly, one of Britain's most historic buildings was not only my home, but under my care. I wanted to hear the stories of other women like me, the custodians of these great homes. So in this podcast, I will travel to breathtaking homes and meet the inspiring women who lead these estates today. Please join me on this special journey. This is Duchess, the podcast. Looming over the idyllic Essex countryside stands one of Europe's best preserved Norman keeps and one of Britain's finest treasures, Headingham Castle. Headingham Castle is straight out of a romantic novel. The land was originally gifted to one of William the Conqueror's most important knights. The residents here signed the Magna Carta, and the castle hosted kings and queens. The awesome 34-metre-high keep was built in the mid-12th century. The De Vere family that called Headingham their home achieved an earldom and remained, like the keep itself, a striking presence in the English political landscape. Eventually, the keep changed hands, first to the Magendies and then to the Lindsays, who to this day run the estate. I travelled to Headingham to meet Demetra Lindsay, who, among running the day-to-day affairs of the estate, is an architect. Demetra's warmth, her charm, and passion absolutely shines through, and I was overjoyed to learn about the female trailblazers that called Headingham their home. To start, however, I wanted to gain an insight into the castle's lengthy history. Welcome, Demetra, and lovely to see you.
Thank you.
How's your day been?
It's been great, and it's lovely to have you here.
So Headingham Castle has got the most incredible history. Could you give us a little bit of insight?
Yes, well, it's essentially nearly 900 years old. And the Alberic de Vere came over from Normandy with William the Conqueror, and they found Headingham, which was already a Saxon fortress. They made this their home. Gosh. And 25 years later, they started building the Norman Keep, which is a fascinating building because it's a very early building, a very early keep. So it's square in plan. They got all the stone from Barnack, which is 100 miles away near Stamford.
Can you imagine Barnack? I know the quarry, actually.
Do you?
Exactly. And the stone doesn't look as if it's from around here, does it?
No, because there's no stone in Essex. So to build a keep of this stature here, it was a fundamental uptaking.
As you've described to me, this is one of the oldest castles in Britain, and it's also played host to some of the most important people in our British history, many of which were actually in the royal family itself. Can you tell us about that?
The 13th Earl of Oxford helped Henry VII get onto the throne with the Battle of Bosworth. And actually, he then got given more lands and more money, and he did up Headingham Castle. So he changed it from being a Norman castle into a Tudor castle, and he built two big towers like Hampton Court. And his godson was Henry VIII. So Henry VIII used to come here as a boy and play tennis on the real tennis court.
Oh my goodness.
Which is rather a lovely bit of history.
Apparently, one of the most popular places in this part of England to get married is this very exceptional castle on the hill.
Architecturally, of course, it's iconic. Because first of all, it's still standing and it hasn't been bashed up by sieges and all the other bits of history that have got in the way. So you know, and being 900 years old, it has exquisite Norman sculpture, which is the decoration inside, and also the widest Norman domestic arch in Western Europe.
Goodness.
Which is quite an accolade, and the you know, the architectural historians go completely doolally about this place.
What is a ringwork castle?
So that is when the castle is built on a hill, and then around it they dig defensive ditches.
And the Norman keep, which is up on the hill in a very fortified position as we came in, yes, is where you hold all your weddings.
Yes, that's right. So that's where the ceremonies happen. And sometimes the whole wedding happens there if it's a small wedding. And if they're a larger wedding, they come over here for the reception and we have them in the house for an hour. And then they go to the marquee.
Perfect. But yeah, how did Jason and the Lindsays, how did they actually end up achieving this wonderful home?
So
there was a link with another lady.
Yes. So Musette Magendy lived here. She was the last of the Magendys and she didn't have any children. And so she decided to go down the Lindsay side of the family to find an heir. And so found my father-in-law, who was actually the third son of his team, and left it to him.
How interesting. And Musette was a character of her time.
A huge character. She was very unconventional in her own self. And she was actually a lesbian and had a very individual life. She was very thoughtful about people who lost their jobs and their livelihoods after the First World War. And she went up to Newcastle and she recruited a whole lot of people who were jobless and looked after them and taught them how to be hoteliers and chefs and totally different things.
What, here? At Hedion?
She had a sort of camp.
How extraordinary. You
know, amazing.
What was it like for a lady, a lesbian at that time, do you think?
Well, I think very lonely. Yeah. You know, you couldn't, you know, you didn't have a man, so people didn't quite know how to...
Where
to put you. You know, at dinner parties, you were always the spare party, weren't you? It must have been very hard. You know, social life was so conventional in those days.
Judgment everywhere.
Judgmental and conventional.
And did she find happiness?
She did. So there's this lovely lady in the history called Lady Jean, or Lady Jane, actually, called Jeannie Lindsay. And she realised, you know, how lonely Musette was, and she introduced her to Marjorie Blackie. And they fell in love. So gorgeous.
How wonderful.
And so they live really happily together for 30 years, which was so nice.
But she wasn't, just from looking at your notes, she wasn't that keen on the drips and the maintenance of the house.
No, that wasn't part of her. You know, we all have different passions, don't we? And that just wasn't hers.
I agree that that was a magic thing you've just said for me, because I think, one, these houses can tend to find us. Yes. And two, we bring, as individuals, our own passion to the home while we're custodians of it, which is a moment in time, really, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Just a brief moment, yeah.
When you look across at that keep that's been there for 900 years, it's just a breath.
Yes, yes. When we got here, in fact, when we got married, Jace said, right, we're not going to be ruled by three things, convention, money, or Hedingham. Well, of course, we're absolutely dominated by all three, really, because you can't live at Hedingham without thinking about, you know, how you're going to pay for it and all the rest of it. And one does end up being conventional because that's how one makes money. You know, you can't be sitting in a caravan in India all your life, can you?
As much as we'd love that.
Yes, exactly.
It's very real, isn't
it?
A roof is very real.
Yes.
And we all have big roofs that we have to keep.
Big roofs and big families. And
what condition, out of interest, was the roof when you arrived?
Buckets. It was just buckets. There were buckets everywhere. And then, you know, the rain would come down and you'd think, you know, we're away for the weekend. We've got to go and empty buckets. You know, it was really funny to spend your time sort of weaving around buckets.
And heating?
And heating, no heating. You know, it was a pretend boiler, but it didn't really do anything. And it was chilly. Yeah, in the winter.
Can I say, I'm very warm. It's incredibly dry. There are no buckets anywhere. I mean, having that wonderful background that you do of being a qualified architect, wouldn't be stretched anywhere more than here, where you have this castle of 900 years old, and then we're sitting in this charming Queen Anne drawing room at the front of Headingham Hall here in Essex, looking across at a beautiful carved fireplace, white, with a wonderful embossed... Is that a painting in, above it?
Yes, absolutely. A Capriccio, some lovely bit of Rome or, you know...
It looks as if it could be in Rome, that does, doesn't it?
So we're actually sitting on a mound. So, in fact, the castle is beautifully situated because it can see over the whole of Essex. But, in fact, we're living in a wood, but because we're so elevated... We can then look down across the lake and you have great views.
And the lake itself?
Used to be three Norman fish ponds and then in 1720 amalgamated into a lake by Adam Holt, the landscape designer.
And the pink walls, silk hangings, and it could be something out of a Jane Austen book, couldn't it?
Yes.
Where daughters might come from behind the screen and join us.
And what is interesting as well about this room is that you see that there aren't any portraits in here. And we, you know, when we have our raucous dinner parties or whatever we do, we don't really like being looked at by people who are sitting there in that sort of Harry Potter kind of portrait way, sort of going, oh, tut, 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 oh, I wouldn't have said that. Oh, no, 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 not another glass of wine. But actually, I was thinking, what do I really love about this house? And really surprisingly, the first thing that came to my head was the portraits.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was so surprised by my reaction because, of course, I've become incredibly fond of all the people who, with everyone, all the people who we have portraits of all lived here. So they're all part of the history and the team. And, you know, whether they're sort of still here in spirit or not, they look after us. Maybe they do look down their noses at some of the things we get up to, but they, you know, they're the support team, aren't they?
And do you have any resident ghosts?
Yes. I could tell you ghost stories until Christmas time, but somehow the ghosts seem to like us because they just create this lovely warm atmosphere. And I think if you go into a house where they don't like you, you can tell instantly, can't you?
You can.
We know we've got a little person because you hear little, you know, very sort of quick footsteps. And we've got someone who moves things, which is quite entertaining at times. You think you have completely lost your marbles.
Do you talk to the ghost?
Sometimes, yes. You hope that
no one's watching.
Because it's so, you know, if anyone, you know, I sometimes come down in the morning and I think, I just feel as if it's appropriate that I say good morning, you know, because you sort of think you're...
They're there.
They're there.
Can you feel them?
Yes.
So I've had this extraordinary feeling at Beaver that I've got the fifth Duchess on my shoulders.
Do you?
Yes. Okay. And she's with me everywhere. And she is the one that I consult with, I talk to. I go around the castle and these portraits of eyes are following me wherever I go. Yeah. And just keeping an eye.
Just keeping an eye. And you know that they're keeping an eye in a really nice way.
Oh, definitely.
And actually, aforementioned Lady Jane Lindsay, she's on the stairs. And she has a really open face. And the way Laszlo painted her hands is so sort of friendly. And you feel... sometimes that she's just patting you on the back as you walk past. And she's going, come on, girl. You know, you'll be all right. Come on.
Oh,
keep going.
That's wonderful.
Which is rather lovely.
Because it is quite lonely at times running these houses, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Because no one has any idea what you're up to or how your life works. It is funny, isn't it? And you know that everybody in those portraits has gone through the same thing.
Exactly.
And I just wish I was wearing the really pretty dresses because I'm always in my jeans.
Well, you look lovely whatever you're in. They think we're more mad than they did before when they hear this podcast, don't they? But it really is true.
We're certified now.
Yeah, we've been definitely certified. As bizarre as it may seem, the magic of these buildings really is the sense that history lives on within these walls. I think it's the way these buildings foster such a profound connection to the past that one can have a wonderful ghostly experience. You've been listening to Duchess, the podcast presented by me, Emma Rutland, and produced by One Fine Play in collaboration with Beaver Castle. A similar haunting of the past is the arcane treatment female custodians can suffer often while running these manors and castles, even in this present day.
I wanted to see if Demetra's experienced this kind of sexism and whether she was fully respected when taking up her role.
So do you feel, Demetra, that you have been supported and understood in your role here as a woman?
At the beginning, I think I can categorically say no. And now, I can definitely say yes. You know, it's so interesting. We've only been here 17 years. And over 17 years, the role of women in the world has changed enormously. I mean, over my time as an architect working in London, you know, they used to call me Treacle because I was a woman on site. And then you come here and actually you come in as the boss, so you're sort of parachuted in. That's quite tough. But because you're a woman and the men who are here, you know, they either chose or not to do what you asked them to do, depending on what the day was. I had to fight hard. When we got here, there hadn't been a child at Headingham for 100 years.
Oh my goodness.
Which is an astonishing problem. And more to the point, all the staff who had used it as they wanted to forever had to revolve around, you know, this person who come in and had to make changes. And that was really difficult. And I found that very hard.
Did you?
Yes.
I did too. And I felt that really? I was almost invading on their home.
Totally. And I, every time we wanted to change something, you met against a brick wall. And yet, you know, you've got a wedding going on one side of a wall and a screaming child who is just purely hungry on the other side of the wall. And yet you can't get the argo going quickly enough in order to make the rice, in order to fill it up, you know, fill the child up with something to stop it crying, you know. And it was just really stressful.
We had this very similar thing at Beaver when I think we must have been there for about a month. And there was loads of butlers and loads of cooks, and every corridor had another someone doing something. And I so remember opening a door and hearing the butlers downstairs saying, "Have we broken her yet?" And I remember,
goodness,
like you, having children hanging off every hip, sobbing down the corridor. And
it's
thinking,
not great, is it?
It's the worst feeling because you are. It doesn't feel like home then, does
it? No. So when you say broken, what did they mean?
Well, they were just playing with me and I really didn't know what I was doing. I felt like a ball they were bouncing.
Yes.
And it was so difficult because on so many levels, I was ill-equipped for the job because I didn't understand etiquette. I didn't understand how you spoke to a butler. I remember my mother-in-law saying to me, "Everyone will call you Your Grace." That felt very, very alien.
Yes.
I didn't have the strength to say, no, please call me Emma, because it was a tradition that I didn't feel equipped in any way to change.
Yeah.
It had been going on. I do remember one story, which, being Welsh, I'd been brought up on Eisteddfods and had always been round every Eisteddfod in Wales and sang and done poetry and so forth. And I had the dinner party, which was a really big step because I had all the local grandees.
Absolutely.
And that was quite terrifying. Scary in itself. And we had a singing butler called Horton. He's a wonderful man. And he was the one butler that remained with us. So Horton had a wonderful voice. So after dinner, I thought the obvious thing to do was to ask the butler to come and sing a few ditties, to which he did. And then, of course, that ridiculous thing where all the ladies leave.
Yes.
So we had to leave. And the girls hounded me into a sort of corner and said, "You do not have your butler sing." And I just was so deflated.
And you slip into the convention, which isn't your... yours.
And it's your home.
You're some weird sort of 1850s convention that people are clinging on to.
It was strange, I agree. And all the time you had judgment. Everywhere you went, people judging your role, how you did it, how you performed it, how you weren't getting it right. And so, yes, you sort of began to put your own blinkers on and think, "I've just got to do it my way.
Yes.
It was scary. And how have you remained so still wonderfully unaffected by it?
Well, I think you have to have a sense of humour in life, don't you? You know, you have to pick yourself up and be assertive. You know, you have to find it in there somewhere, yes, don't you?
And you definitely have that. Well, you haven't lost your charm. but you've obviously got a steely centre.
Yes, well, and actually I think you grow a thick skin quite quickly, don't you?
Yeah. I think the best thing in life is to have a short memory.
Yes. Well, luckily that's quite natural.
So and a thick skin, most probably.
Yeah, yes.
The short memory and the thick skin. Very, very... I mean, looking back, can you believe what you've done?
Well, it's really funny, isn't it? Because it all seems such like a lovely blurry memory. And yet there were some really tough bits in there.
Yeah.
You know, I had a hilarious thing that Natasha aged... I think we'd been here for 2 months and Natasha was then aged 3 weeks old and I pushed her down to the village in the pram thinking, you know, how sort of romantic. I'm walking around the village with my baby and I was terribly proud of myself and all that sort of thing. And I walked into a shop I'd never been into and there were only 3 shops in the village, so it wasn't. And I looked around and I then left and then I came back up here. And then as I walked in the door, someone said, "Oh, you've been down to the tea rooms." I said, "Huh? Yes, I have." "Oh, well, they rang up to see if it was you." And I felt so invaded. I've practically never been back. I mean, I just couldn't cope with it. It was just extraordinary that I was then the next, I was like a sort of the new thing to look at. It was really odd.
Yes, it is odd.
Yeah.
And I do remember my mother-in-law saying to me, I had exactly the same when we first got married and I became Lady Granby. And I remember sobbing with my mother-in-law and saying, "I just can't bear people calling me your ladyship. It just feels so wrong." And she said to me, and I've held it with me, she said, "Everyone respects the title in this community, but they will choose whether they like you or not." So yes. I have held it with me. I think most probably they...
That's very good advice, isn't
it? It was very good advice because we were all in the same boat, weren't we? Yeah. And as you rightly say, you have become the local celebrity.
Yes, yes.
In your community. And that was a very difficult thing for you to get your head around. But now it sits with you well.
Well, better. Yes, definitely. You know, I...
Because you become you.
Yes, yes, exactly. And they now know who I am rather than imagining what I might be, if you see what I mean.
There's always a bit of mystique about the big house.
Yes, exactly.
And it's a very, very public life that we lead if you're a private person, because you're always sharing your life with people.
Always.
And that sounds, to the listener again, most probably incredibly spoilt. But if being able to shut one's front door has got a magic all of its own to it.
Absolutely. And to be able to go home after work, which, of course, we can't do.
We live over
there.
The job.
Yes.
The worst moment for me at Beaver with weddings, our bedroom was right over the back door and the bottles were all leaving after the wedding. So they'd start leaving it about 5:30 in order to get the castle ready for the castle opening to the public at 11. But that reality is so far away from what people think.
Yes, totally. They never see the stage management side. They just see,
in order to pull it off, you've got to be able to go into the front room and put on the tiara and the long dress.
Absolutely.
And pretend that life is going on exactly as it did in Downton Abbey times.
And that's what people want you to be.
Yeah.
So you have to be that person, because otherwise they're disappointed, frankly, aren't they?
It's a bit of stage setting, isn't it?
It is.
I agree with you totally.
And then when you turn up to the front door with your muddy jeans and your hair's all over the place, they said, look at you in amazement.
I know.
And you say, well, I've just been crawling around trying to fix the leak because no one else is here. You know?
I think the funniest is when you've got your head down and your bum in the air and you're in a flower bed of some description and the public come round to you and suggest that the gardens are rather weedy. That has happened to me, and
really,
I'm sure most
really
probably
funny.
To you as well.
Yes,
anyway, moving swiftly on. Interestingly, I come from a very, very different world to the one I married into. And if I'm honest about my upbringing, I always felt it equipped me enormously well for the journey of the life I've carried out to this date, because we were a farming family. I helped Mum with the B&B because that educated me. I was very dyslexic, so I couldn't go to the local grammar school, so they scraped money together to send me to public school. I then failed I'm a failed opera singer. I was a failed this land agent.
Well, that's very interesting with your story. My story is ditto, not brought up in a castle. I was brought up in an old rectory in Hampshire. My grandparents, both sets, actually lived in big houses. And I think that has helped me enormously because both of them had very public roles. And my parents were very charity-minded, which I think really helps because you, if you see your parents sharing their lives, you just see that that's, you know, and actually one day Daddy said when we moved here, he said, you know, well, why aren't you church warden yet? And we sort of looked at him, and our children were tiny. He said, well, where is that? You know.
Haven't got time for that.
And he said, yes, but you know, that's what you've got to do.
So you have this great sense of duty.
Yes.
And that's something that's key for running Heritage.
I think it is, isn't it? Because as you mentioned earlier, you don't own a place like this. There is no way you can own it. You are looking after it just for a brief breath of time. And if you understand that, you realise what your role is and you have a duty to pass it on.
I love that. I have to say, from my own experience, it's something I've had to learn because, yes, Dad was a church warden, but a farming family wouldn't have had, I didn't perhaps have the grandeur of upbringing that you did. We were all very, very hands-on, and the pennies were all collected very carefully up. And so, yeah, I have had to learn that part of living in Heritage, it's a partnership with
it
people.
Is, yes.
And two, I think it's what you can give back to your surrounding community.
Absolutely. And the one of the lovely things about Headingham is that we employ lots of people who live within a 2 mile radius.
Wonderful.
Which is really lovely. And then the Headingham family becomes a really, you know, lovely
tight knit
to be. Yes.
Family.
Yeah.
Where everyone is supporting everyone else.
Yes.
And can I ask, my absolute go-to question is always, do you know what the running costs are each year of living here?
Yes. Eye-watering. About £250,000 a year.
To stand still.
To stand still. Yeah. Which is mad, isn't it? You know, you don't start conversations with money, do you? But if one did, I think most people would empathise a lot more with one sort of, you know, it's not a predicament, but with one's challenge. Because it's relatable.
Well, it is to us girls because we're trying to bring in the pennies to stand still.
Absolutely. And when you think about it, if you have to go all that way just to stand still, you know, the froth on the cappuccino is fairly sort of ethereal, really, isn't it?
And for a year like we've had this year, it's very, very worrying.
It's very worrying, yeah.
Lots of things.
And we support so many additional people, you know, all the wedding suppliers and the florists and all those people rely on us to give them business, and we can't. So the whole Headingham family is very extensive, and we're the sort of head of the family.
That's lovely. You know. But look, you've been here for 900 years.
Exactly.
You're going to do another 900.
We will indeed.
There'll be a few more COVIDs, but we'll get through it.
We'll get through it.
So you've managed to bring this wonderful home back from the brink, which is so fascinating to hear, because there are no buckets now. There are no dripping ceilings.
No.
What have you got moving forward?
Well, the next stage is the keep and doing a bit more to the upper floors. So we did a huge thing in 2015 renovation and got all the electrics and the plumbing sorted out. We were allowed to put in loos, which is amazing. And we got quite high up, but we only really got to the top of the first floor. And so now we're going to do the banqueting hall, the minstrels gallery, and then up to the dormitory floor where we're going to put a bedroom, because living history is the way to teach children at the moment, which is so important. So people will be able to come and stay.
So you're going to have people that come to stay here?
Yes.
And
yes.
On what premise to come and stay?
So like a sort of B&B, a bit like the Landmark Trust, but it will be really fun staying in a Norman keep, because I don't think you can do that anywhere else.
How extraordinary. So you'll be able to come and stay in a Norman keep.
Yeah.
So are there times, Dimitra, when you are just frozen with terror of doing things that could be wrong?
Yes, because if it's wrong, it will stand out like a beacon amongst everything else. And believe me, there are times when we have started down a modus operandi and retreated big time, had a big think about it, and then gone completely opposite direction because it just wasn't right. And you just don't want to ruin anything. And every time you put in a nail into the wall, you have to get permission as to its location and its depth and what it's for, and you have to have a justification. You know, it's quite a thing.
Do you have a sense of responsibility for future generations?
You know, the sense of responsibility is the essence of getting out of bed in the morning, isn't it? What would be amazing if future generations could get out of Heading and what we get out of it. And even if it is just that sense that it will, life carries on, you know, and that is what history is about, isn't it? It's learning that the perpetuation of life and family and community is really the essence to the human culture, isn't it?
And maybe that's exactly what Heddingham does to your surrounding community. It gives them a sense of security, safety, that life does just keep going on because the big house is still on the hill.
Yes, well, you'd hope so, because it's a dominant feature. If it has the right atmosphere, it will continue to be that.
Because if we now go gently forward into your grounds and your gardens,
yes.
How extraordinary is that story about how you've created this extraordinary garden, beautifully landscaped?
We restored the old farm pond and we restored what we now call the formal pond. And we have steps. You know, Heddingham had become very run down. It was very Sleeping Beauty. And because we were given diggers all Christmas, and we suddenly got rid of the brambles, and it revealed this astonishing 12th century and 17th century garden.
Oh my goodness. So you went right back to the original.
Yeah, because because all the bones are here.
Yeah.
You just had to reveal it.
You're taking away the layers. So are the gardens ever open to the public?
Yes, yes.
I think they are exquisite. Thanks. And I love the new pond. What is, Demetra, the secret to a great British garden?
I think it's all about contrast and surprises. So it's all about turning a corner, isn't it, and finding something completely different or an extraordinary view or something that you're not really expecting. And sometimes it's fantastic flowers, and then other times you're in a glorious woodland. Yes, it's just an adventure, really, isn't it?
That's a really magical way of putting it. And can I just say today, I have felt I've met a kindred spirit.
That's so kind. I think I have too.
And a soulmate for life.
Yes.
And I want you to come and help me with my garden.
Oh, you are sweet.
Because I deeply need your vision.
Well, I'd love to come and look at your garden.
And we'll go in the archives and look at some of the Lindsay letters.
Oh, wouldn't that be fun?
But I think Heddingham Castle is very, very lucky. It's got one of the pioneering women that it's had throughout generations of history. And today we've been very lucky to hear the story of it in the 21st century.
Well, thank you very much for coming.
One last question, if I may. If we were sitting here in a room, this beautiful room, what would you say to the past six generations ago, to the lady of the house?
Gosh, I would say thank you for keeping it here. You know, there were some pretty sticky times six generations ago, and however they managed it, they did. And we still have the privilege of being here now.
So it's a big thank you.
It's a very big thank you. Yes.
And likewise, if you were sitting here and looking into the future to six generations, so that is your great, 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 great granddaughter,
yes,
who could well be in this home, what would you say to her?
I would say the most important thing is to be happy in your skin. And if you are that, you will live in this house as it should be lived in. And it might not bear any resemblance from how we live in it now. Who knows? But they'll make it their own, as I've had to make it my own. And then they'll be happy here because it's such a great house to live in. And it's such an extraordinary place historically that if they can do that, then I think we'll have done our job.
Oh, that's tear jerking. Thank you. God bless you.
Thank you very much.
It is, isn't it? So emotional, yes, when you think
is.
About it.
It is.
From coming to Headingham Castle today, it's clear it wasn't just the strength of the walls that has ensured the castle stands today, but the strength of the people who live within. It has been wonderful to explore this magnificent keep, learn the history, and be introduced to the powerful woman that continue to watch over the castle to this day. Thank you so much, Demetra, for joining me on my podcast, and thank you all at home for joining in as well. Next week, I'm travelling to the beautiful Ripley Castle to meet one of my great friends, Lady Ingleby. Lady Ingleby reveals the rebellious past of Ripley, and I hear some chilling stories of mischievous ghosts, and we discuss why it's so important to have mentors in the Stately Wives Club. Couple of quick notes before we go. Important ones. Make sure you subscribe to Duchess the podcast so you get automatically notified about new episodes wherever you listen to a podcast. I want to know about you and what you think of the show, so please be sure to send me your comments and tell me about your own lineage and the women who have inspired you in your life. Please write to me on duchess@duchessthepodcast.com. And if there are any stately homes in particular you'd like me to visit, do send your suggestions to me as soon as possible. I've started a newsletter that includes all this and more and comes straight to your inbox. It's really easy to sign up at duchessthepodcast.com. You've been listening to Duchess, the podcast, presented by me, Emma Rutland, the Duchess of Rutland, produced by One Fine Play in collaboration with Beaver Castle. From Beaver Castle, Lady Violet Manners is the executive producer. From One Fine Play, James Bishop is the executive producer. Kasra Ferruzia is the audio and visual engineer. Connor Foley is the editorial producer and researcher. Additional creative support from Selena Christofis and Theo Banner. Thanks for listening to Duchess, the podcast.